The motion picture industry, through the friendly cooperation of the radio industry, is presenting this program tonight. Among the artists you will hear during the next hour and a half are these:
Jack Benny, Connie Boswell,
Madeline Carroll, Ronald Coleman,
Melvin Douglas, Clark Gable,
Fay Holden, Charles Lawton,
Bob Hope, Myrna Loy,
Mary Martin, Groucho Marx,
The Merrimax, Frank Morgan, Merle Oberon,
Reginald Owen, Dick Powell, Tyrone Power,
Mickey Rooney, Ann Rutherford,
Barbara Stanwyck, Lewis Stone, Robert Taylor,
Shirley Temple, Meredith Wilson and his orchestra, Max Taylor's choral group, Don Wilson,
and Knox Manning. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a brief keynote address by a man who needs no introduction anywhere, Tyrone Power.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. A few minutes ago, I was told that this program is being broadcast by two great networks of America, and in addition to many independent stations, that it is being broadcast by shortwave to England and the European continent. This is America's tribute to the Greek nation. Greece is a little country, but today, more than ever before in its great history, it has become an important, inspiring nation in the eyes of all peoples, who believe, as the Greeks do, that life and liberty are worth any sacrifice. This week, America begins a nationwide campaign to bring needed assistance to the wives and children of the Greek fighters. Tonight's broadcast opens the campaign. Any help we can give them is an investment in democracy. I believe it would be appropriate at this time to pause in respect to the courage of Greece. Now, we open our program with a march, written and conducted by Meredith Wilson. The title, America Calling. The home of perhaps the best-known, best-loved family in America. Judge Hardy's family. And we're going to eavesdrop on Lewis Stone as the judge, Fay Holden as Mrs. Hardy, Ann Rutherford as Polly Benedict, and Mickey Rooney as Andy Hardy. Judge Hardy is coming downstairs in search of his son.
Andrew Hardy, where are you, son?
Right here, Dad. In the living room, James.
Oh, I see. Andrew, I just had a phone call from Officer Caldwell.
Officer Caldwell? The motorcycle cop, huh?
Yes.
I'm innocent, Dad. Innocent as a newborn babe.
Well, he said something about encountering you at 3:30 this morning.
Now, James, you gave Andrew permission to stay out last night as late as he wanted to.
Well, is that any reason for Andy and Polly Benedict being found at 3:30 a.m. in his car parked in the darkest section of Rutherford Avenue?
Mom, if you'll only excuse us, please, maybe I could explain this to Dad, you know, man-to-man style.
Very well, Andrew. Dinner in 10 minutes, James.
Dad, I didn't park on Rutherford Avenue for any smooching.
Smooching?
Smooching. Mousing, you know, a crush party.
Oh, a crush party. You mean what in my youth we call spooning.
Yeah, only spooning sounds pretty vulgar, don't it? But Polly and me, we only parked there so as to get some sleep. We were sleepy.
Sleepy? Then why on earth didn't you go to your respective homes and call it a day?
Oh, we couldn't have done that. We'd have lost our self-respect.
Now, look here, Andy.
Dad, it was to prove that we're grown up. You see, yesterday, us kids in school made an agreement on account of we're graduating this year. We decided to break in our parents to start to cure them of that be-home-early stuff. So all the boys and all the girls, too, agreed that for the basketball dance last night, we'd none of us get home until 4 a.m.
Well, that sounds somewhat fantastic.
But everybody got tired about 1:30, and The dance broke up, and so there was Polly and me with our word of honor pledge not to get home early, and yet we couldn't hardly keep our eyes open. So we parked in the dark street and took a nap until time to get up at 4 a.m. Mm.
And is that all?
All? Oh, Polly was in the front seat and me crossways in the rumble seat when the officer Caldwell comes around and wakes us up.
Well, it doesn't sound very reprehensible.
Reprehensible? It wasn't even romantic. It turns out that Polly is kind of unpleasant when she gets sleepy. And when she woke up, boy, was she in a bad humor. Oh, let me tell you, Dad, since last night, I'm doing a lot of thinking about ever getting married at all.
Oh, hello, Polly.
Good evening, Mrs. Hardy. Is Andrew?
Oh, there you are, Andy. Hello, Judge Hardy.
Polly, if you've come about last night, everything's explained and Dad understands.
Oh, my folks simply howled with laughter.
What's so funny about it?
Well, Mother and Father were coming home late from playing bridge, and they drove through Rutherford Avenue and they saw us. Andy, they said that you looked simply screamingly ludicrous.
Me? Well, I'll bet even Abraham Lincoln couldn't have looked dignified sleeping in a rumble seat and trying not to get any grease on his pants.
But it wasn't that. You were snoring.
Snoring, huh?
You know, Andy, I'll never be able to ride in your car again without thinking of you with your mouth open making horrible noises.
Pa! You didn't look anything like a rose geranium with your hair all mussed up and everything.
Oh, here. I want to listen to the radio. Turn it on, Polly, will you please?
Oh, but Judge Hardy, my mother thought Andy was so funny. She said he sounded just like my father, which is something like a sick calf.
If you ask me, this conversation has sunk to a very, very low level. Dad, you know what I dreamed about Polly last night?
Andy, did you really dream about me?
Dad, in my dream, Polly was only 8 years old, and I was her father. And I was washing her mouth. I was so for thinking disrespectful to her elders.
Andrew Hardy.
Hold on. I declare this bout a draw. Andy, tune up that radio volume, will you? I want to listen to the Greek War Relief broadcast.
And, since we know the Hardys are listening in, a little later in the program, we'll return to their home in Carvel for another visit. Tonight's Judge Hardy Family Playlist was written and supervised by Kerry Wilson, who produces the Hardy Family Pictures for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, there are two young men standing in the wings who are very anxious to get on. In fact, they've been here ever since 3:30 this morning. Our co-masters of ceremonies, Jack Benny and Bob Hope.
On my way to the theater tonight, a funny thing happened to me. A panhammer.
Oh, pardon me. Pardon me, Bob. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Jack. Age before corn.
No, you tell that gag, Bob. You always get away with murder. Go ahead.
No, Jack, we all want to know what happened to you on the way to the theater. And that's my last straight line for the night.
Look, Bob, you've got nothing to worry about. If I wanted a straight man, I wouldn't get a guy with a nose like a shoehorn.
Now I know why Fred Allen hates you.
He hates everybody. Now, as a matter of fact, Bob, I'm just as mixed up here as you are. In the first place, I can't understand why they wanted two masters of ceremonies for this benefit.
Well, I guess they figured one of us wouldn't show up.
Well, why did you?
I didn't think you had a tuxedo. And I'm right.
I wouldn't talk about my tuxedo, Bob. In fact, I quit making payments on the one you're wearing right now. Now, look, Bob, as long as we're in a spot here, we got to be fair about this and divide everything 50-50.
Okay, 50-50.
Now, Bob, I've got a list here of all the celebrities to be introduced tonight.
Oh, they gave you a list.
Yes, I'm very good at reading.
Go ahead and brag.
Now, let's see.
I hate a show-off.
Bob, please, professional courtesy. Now, I'll read the list. There's Robert Taylor, Barbara Stanwyck, Carol Lombard, Charles Lafton.
Charles Lafton, give me that list. Hey, you're right, it is Charles Lafton. Go ahead.
Now, I'm afraid it isn't.
Look, Jack, let's get this settled. We'll split these introductions 50-50.
Okay.
Now, let me see. Now, I'll take Madeline Carroll. Who do you want?
Well...
You take Dick Powell.
Oh, you get Madeline Carroll, and I get Dick Powell.
That's right.
Lucky me.
Then I'll take Carol Lombard. Who do you want?
Well, I don't know. I've got Dick Powell.
Well, go ahead. Pick somebody else.
Well...
You take Charles Lafton.
Thanks.
Now I don't know who to pick. Let me see. I'll take Myrna Loy.
Who do you want?
There, you take Groucho Marx.
Groucho Marx. I wish Harry Lauder was on this program. I'd like to get one skirt. You know, that's my first big laugh. You know that.
You know, we can wait tonight. It's a two-hour show.
Now, look, Bob, this whole thing is too complicated. I've got another idea.
All right.
You take half the show, and I'll take half the show.
Okay, Jack, we'll cut the program in half.
Okay, have you got a pair of scissors?
No, but I've got a knife.
I was afraid of that.
Well, look here, Jack, we don't have to cut this up. You emcee the first half of the show, and I'll go back to the dressing room and see if the lamb chops are done.
Okay. Bob, take the fat off of mine, will you? Nice fellow, Hope. I understand he's doing very well on the air. I must buy a radio and tune in on him sometime. Still can't understand what he's doing here. And now, ladies and gentlemen... I'm sure he wasn't invited. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it was with great pleasure that I bring you a grand singer of song. A young lady whom you've heard many times on the air, and who is now a featured artist on the Bing Crosby program. Miss Connie Boswell. Well, good luck to you, Connie.
Thanks very much, Bob.
He's got the other half. I'm Jack, Jack Bennett. I mean, I knew this would happen.
Good morning. Good morning, you sleepy head. Stop yawning, get out of bed. Say the air is soft as silk. It's time you get some morning milk. Come on, wake up, get up. Look at the grass silver in the sun, heavy with the dew. Look at the birds, you can almost see how they're breaking through. Look at the birds feeding all their young in the sycamore. All the morning glory keep a-climbing all around my door. Just take a breath of the new mown hay and the sugar cane. Looks like tonight there'll be a moon down in Lover's Lane. There you go, daydreaming, when it's time that you obey that sunrise there ahead. Get out of bed. Did you hear what I said? I'm gonna stop my coaxing and I'm gonna paddle you instead. Just take a breath of the new mown hay and the sugar cane. Looks like tonight there'll be a moon down in Mother's Lane. Now there you go, daydreaming, when it's sunrise serenade. That sunrise.
Good, Connie. Very good. That was really brilliant. By the way, Connie, how would you like being a guest star on my program some Sunday night?
Oh, I'd love to. What are you paying, Jackson?
Forget it. And now, ladies and... Come to think of it, Connie, I already have a singer, so let's make it some other time, shall we?
All right, just...
Goodbye. How can a... How can a girl with such a sweet voice be so commercial? Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Goldwyn just received the following telegram from Spiros Skouras, president of the Greek War Relief Association. The first donation which has come in as a result of this broadcast is a check from the Order of AIPA, the largest American Greek fraternal organization, for $50,000. Best regards. And now, ladies and gentlemen, there are three very charming people standing here at the microphone waiting to be introduced. They're all very dear friends of mine, so I'd like to have you meet Barbara Stanwyck and her husband, Melvin Douglas. Or rather, Robert Taylor and his husband. Or his wife, Barbara Douglas. Or Stanwyck. Melville Stanwyck. I mean, Robert Taylor, Barbara Stanwyck, and Melvin Douglas. I'm sorry.
We present for purely educational purposes An Evening at Home with Mr. and Mrs. Robert Taylor, written and supervised by Doris Sherry. In the cast are Robert Taylor as Robert Taylor, Miss Barbara Stanwyck as Mrs. Robert Taylor, and Melvin Douglas playing the part of a motion picture star named Melvin Douglas. The scene, as the title suggests, is the home of Mr. and Mrs. Robert Taylor. As the play opens, Mr. and Mrs. are in the living room of their home.
Bob, the least you might do is read it before you start criticizing
it. I haven't any interest in it. For the first time in weeks, I have a night at home, and I don't want to read sketches.
You don't want to read it because they've asked me to play the sketch with Melvin Douglas.
That's nonsense. The way you talk, a person would think I was jealous about the idea of your playing a love scene on the air with Melvin Douglas.
Well, if you're not jealous, you must be standing in a bad light because your face is a nice shade of apple green. Well, that's probably Melvin. Try to be polite, and if you can't, try to be tactful, and if not, at least be civil.
Is it all right if I just kick him in the shins as he walks into the room?
Oh. Hello, Bob. Good evening, Barbara.
Hello, Melvin.
Hi, Mel. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, it's all right. We were having a fine time. Did you get your copy of the script, Barbara?
Yes, I read it. I think it's swell.
Did you read it, Bob?
No.
That thing on Bob's face is a pout.
Oh. Retakes are just tired.
No, just Barbara's imagination.
No, I think Bob's a little jealous.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not. I don't think he likes the idea of you and me playing a love scene on the air.
But it's for charity's sake, Bob. This is to help the Greeks, this program.
Don't appeal to my sentimental side. I'll do just as much for the Greeks as anybody.
How about running through it, Barbara?
Fine.
Wait a minute. Wouldn't you like to have a drink or something before you start rehearsing?
No, that can wait. I'm anxious to see how this plays.
Yeah, so I noticed. You couldn't be happier if they were paying you to do this broadcast.
Well, my feeling is, once you promise to do something, you might as well do it.
That's just the way I feel.
I can't understand why nobody thought of the idea of Barb and me playing this scene.
Well, they probably thought the audience wouldn't believe it if you played a love scene with your own wife. You know, it spoils the illusion.
Bob, either you stop talking or we'll rehearse someplace else.
Oh, no, you don't. I'm not sulking. I was just making an observation.
I don't know why you're getting so excited. It's only a sketch for the radio. We'll be in front of 1,000 people broadcasting to millions.
Well, that makes it worse.
This isn't a commercial program, Bob. It's for charity.
I know all about that. Barbara told me it's for charity. You told me it's for charity.
Well, don't jump at me. I was just stating a fact.
We never get anything done yelling at each other. Now, let's play it through and have it over with.
You're pretty eager about this, Barbara.
Eager schmeager. We've got to rehearse.
Wouldn't you like to play a little backgammon first, Mel?
I don't play backgammon.
Gin rummy?
Listen, we'll play later, Bob. We ought to run through this.
All right. Go ahead.
Well, Barbara, the announcer says that you and I are up in a shack in the mountains. And we're building a fire in the fireplace. And you're tired and cold. And you're looking at my powerful shoulders as I build a fire.
Powerful shoulders? Your shoulders droop.
Listen. Listen, this fellow's just a character in the play. It's not me.
Well, nobody will believe it. They know you. They ought to get somebody with real shoulders.
Well, I don't know. The tailor does a pretty good job with your shoulders.
Oh, yeah. Taking his side, huh?
Oh, Bob, you're being very conventional about this. Acting just like a husband and not a good one either.
Well, why not? I am a husband. Yours.
Now, just sit down in that chair and relax. Like the dentist said, this won't hurt a bit.
All right, Barbara, you've got the first line.
Oh, yes. I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't come along.
Oh, it is nursing. You would have found the way.
What is that?
I'm a French guide.
You sound like a poor man's Charles Boyer.
We'll never get anything done if you keep interrupting, Bob.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, no. I never would have managed if you hadn't found me.
It is funny. Here in the mountains, a person comes to believe in destiny. We have a name for this destiny. We call her the Lady of the Mountains. It was she who led me to you.
Bob!
Yes, dear?
That's the first time you've wound up that clock in 6 months.
Well, it's about time I did it, then. It's all done.
Thank you. I'll give you your cue again, Barbara.
It was she who led me to you.
Oh, tell me more about this Lady of the Mountains.
The legend says she has eyes just like yours. And hair the color of autumn leaves like yours.
Hey, I thought you were reading this, not acting it.
Now, what do you mean?
What's he got his arms around you for?
Because it says so in the script.
It's a radio script. What do they need that for?
It gives more realism.
To whom?
To me!
Look, Bob, why don't you go to your room and we'll go through this rehearsal by ourselves and it won't annoy you. Or go take a drink, or go play solitaire, or go for a ride, or just go.
I wouldn't leave this room for $1,000.
Look, if you don't want me to play this scene, I won't do it. I was just doing it for charity, just for the Greeks.
You weren't doing so bad for yourself, either.
Oh, come on, Melvin, let's finish it.
All right. I just gave you the speech about the Lady of the Mountains. Now I'll give you the cue again. And her hair, it is the color of autumn leaves, like yours.
Oh, your voice is like music.
His voice sounds like music. I'm Bing Crosby.
Well, if you put on a saddle, you'd look like something Crosby keeps in his stable.
My dear husband, you are driving me crazy.
I was
on... Bob, please, just sit down and relax. Please.
Well, I just think the script's silly, that's all. I don't know what you're doing it for.
I told you the reason I was doing it was...
I know, for charity.
Oh, come on, Melvin, stop arguing. Let's finish the scene. Yes, your voice is like music.
Why are you trembling, my lovely Lady of the Mountains? Why are your eyes so moist with tears?
Hold me, dear. Hold me.
Of course, if you two weren't acting, I'd swear you'd kissed each other.
Well, we have to make it sound good for the air.
They've got sound effects for the radio.
If it would make you feel better, you could step in just for the sound effects.
You're too generous.
You're too exasperating.
Well, I know a kiss when I hear one.
Oh, never mind the kiss, Bob. That was incidental. Oh, I'm so sorry. No offense, Milton. What did you think of the entire sketch, Bob?
Well, I can't tell you in mixed company.
Well, it was the first run-through. We'll be better next time.
Better not be, especially in that clinch.
Mel, I think you'll be great.
You couldn't be better no matter how many times you did it.
And that could be a compliment, but I don't think it is.
Well, it's not, but it's not your fault. It's the fault of the script. Phony, all that fake dialogue.
I think that's a pretty cheap way to show your jealousy, Bob, discouraging us like that.
Just as I said, it's not your fault. It's the material. If I were you, Mel, I wouldn't do it. It'll ruin you. Nobody believes that kind of junk anymore.
You know, you sound as though you're serious, which worries me and makes me very suspicious.
Sure, I'm serious. I'll admit I was burned up for time, but the truth is I think you're both being very short-sighted playing that material.
I think you're being hypercritical.
I think he's being hyper-jealous.
Oh, now, really, take the character of the French guy. That sort of character's old-timey. People laugh at that type of characterization. You, Barbara, that spoiled society girl, that's not for you.
Maybe you're talking sense, Bob.
Well, if he's talking sense, it's a change. Hello? Oh, just a minute, Mr. Sidney. It's for you, Bob.
Hello?
Oh, Bob, how do you like the sketch?
Well, for one thing, I don't think Melvin's right in it.
Melvin? Melvin who?
Melvin Douglas.
Oh, he's not supposed to be there. We've changed the program around. You're supposed to play that sketch with Barbara.
Oh, I'm supposed to do it.
Why, sure. I've got something else for Melvin, but I want you and Barbara to do that one. I think you'd be great as a French guy.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll get on it right away. Thanks. There's been a mistake, Mel. You're going in for another sketch, and Barbara and I are going to do this one.
I thought you said you wouldn't play it.
What about me, that society girl?
Well, a fella can change his mind.
But the dialogue, you said that was old-fashioned.
What are you talking about? It's a wonderful sketch. It'd be great for us. Come on, Barbara, let's get into it. I do a wonderful French dialect. Well, so long, Mel. Happy landing, unless, of course, you want to see me play the part.
No, no, thank you. I think I'll go home and bake a ham, and I do mean you. Good night.
Good night, Mel.
By the way, thanks, Meredith, for jumping in there. I forgot to introduce the sketch. I know Phil Harris would never have thought of that. But that play was really very funny. I really enjoyed that. By the way, Bob, I was just wondering if you and Barbara and Melvin would like to make an appearance on my program some Sunday night. It'd be loads of fun.
It's a swell idea. How about it, Barbara?
Oh, I'd love to. How about you, Melvin?
Oh, well, I don't know. It'd mean a lot of work and fuss and everything.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
I guess you're right, Melvin. It means wasting a whole Sunday.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Let's forget the whole thing. So long,
Jack.
So long, Jack. Hey, what happened there? No, for a minute, I thought I had him. Oh, well. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Hey, Jack.
The next star is my pleasure to introduce...
Now, Jack, remember me, Bob Hope?
You're the guy that gave me the first half of the show, and you're back already. What do you want?
Well, I can't let you introduce the next star, Shirley Temple, and she's a little young for you.
Mm-hmm. After all...
After all, the public would sort of expect a girl like Shirley to be introduced by a boy like me.
They would, huh? Pull down those pants. Because those varicose veins aren't helping you any, you know? Matter of fact, I should introduce Shirley Temple.
That's right. You both have curls. Of course, yours are from Westmore's.
Is that so?
Is this where I'm supposed to stand?
Oh, go away, little girl. We're getting ready to introduce Shirley Temple.
But I'm Shirley Temple.
Yeah, and I'm Clark Gable.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Gable. Gee, you look much prettier in your pictures.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is Shirley Temple, a new and lovely Shirley Temple.
Shirley, I'm really not Clark Gable. I'm Jack Benny.
And I'm Bob Hope.
Is he really Bob Hope, Mr. Benny?
Sure, why else should he admit it? Say, Shirley, you listen to my radio program, don't you?
Of course, Mr. Benny.
Why not? She's too young to go out nights.
Except Tuesday night.
Wait a minute, Shirley, have you ever heard my program?
Oh, yes, Mr. Hope. I listen to your program. I'm still a little girl, you know.
Say, I like you. You know, Shirley, I honestly believe you're one of the outstanding personalities in the picture industry and a very capable actress. Now tell me, what do you think of my acting?
Well...
Gee, Jack, what a compliment.
Yeah.
Of course, personally, Jack, I think you're getting a little too old for those Lionel Barrymore roles.
I think so, Mom. Tell me honestly, Shirley, which one of us looks younger, Bob or me?
Well...
Go ahead, Shirley, tell the truth. What do you care if you make one of us an enemy?
If I tell the truth, I'll have two enemies.
Why, Shirley, don't you like me either?
Oh, yes, Mr. Hope. I've admired your pictures. I think you're so romantic.
Oh, come now, Shirley. I don't want you to think of me as being romantic. I want you to treat me as a father. When you get a little older, you can treat me as a brother. When you get a little older than that, it's every man for himself.
Say, Shirley, now that Corny got his gag in... haven't you something to say to the boys and girls listening in?
Yes, Mr. Benny, I have.
Well, come on, Jack. There's a lot of people in front of the theater. Let's go outside and take a bow.
Okay.
It's windy, so hold your hair.
I will. Go ahead, Charlie.
Ladies and gentlemen, and boys and girls, I'm sure there is no one in the world who hasn't, at one time or another, needed help from someone else. You, therefore, ought to give help to this wonderful cause. I have. Won't you all?
Thank you very much, Doc. And now, at this point, ladies and gentlemen... we had a great treat prepared for you. Miss Norma Shearer and myself were going to do the balcony scene from Romeo and Juliet. But unfortunately, my tights haven't arrived yet, and neither has Miss Shearer. So in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to present to you my dear friend, Mr. Charles Laughton.
I beg your pardon, old boy. The name's Laughton.
Oh, it's you. Oh, Lawton. Yeah. Charles. Oh, I thought it was another fellow I used to know called Laston. He was a juggler. I was wondering what he was doing on this program. Oh, my goodness. I really...
Well, now that I am here, will you introduce me and stop drooling?
Okay, Mr. Lawton. Mr. Lawton, ladies and gentlemen. Gee, I didn't mean anything.
Ladies and gentlemen, a cable has just this moment reached us, addressed to Sam Goldwyn from the Premier of Greece. With your very kind permission, I would like to read it to you. It is with great pleasure that I am given the opportunity to express to you and to your collaborators and all the great artists in Hollywood my heartfelt thanks for your Philhellenic sentiments and sympathies toward Greece fighting for liberty. I highly appreciate your initiative in organizing this broadcast in Hollywood, which is another manifestation of the interest with which the noble American people and its artistic world are following our struggle for liberty and justice. Signed, Albert Alexander Koritzis.
Charles, before you leave, I was just wondering, I just wanted to ask you, you know, would you like to appear on my program some night?
Thank you very much. No!
That's the most definite thing I've ever heard. Thanks, just the same.
Oh, Charles. Pardon me, Jack.
What is it, Doc?
We pause briefly for station identification.
You have just heard Charles Lawton's eloquent appeal on the nationwide broadcast for Greek war relief. And I know all of us here in Los Angeles will want to help in this cause. After all, if we can help the starving women and children, it's the least we can do. All you have to do is pick up your phone and call Bullock's Trinity 1911 or the May Company. Tucker 8211, and tell the young lady who answers your call how much you want to contribute. A Western Union messenger engaged for this purpose will come to your door to pick up the contribution. Make your call now, so that Los Angeles will be up among the leaders when they count up the final score of America's generosity. Just call Bullock's Trinity 1911 or the May Company, Tucker 8211. Now, please do not phone this station. Phone Trinity 1911 or Tucker 8211. And now we have several contributions that have come in here, which we'd like to read to you. One from Jim G. Emulis of San Luis Obispo, California, who is a former Greek soldier and who contributes the sum of $1,600. We have also a contribution from the Ashtahula Fraternity, Elks Lodge of Ohio, chapter number 208, signed by James Breen and contributing $100. Paul Block, noted publisher, donates an additional $250 to the amount set in to Mr. Samuel Goldwyn. Remember, if you wish to make a contribution to this cause, phone Trinity 1911, Bullock's or the May Company, Tucker 8211.
Starring Madeline Carroll and Groucho Marx. Miss Carroll plays Mary Thorndike, who has been arguing all day with her husband, John Thorndike, played by Groucho Marx. Now the Thorndikes are cooling off on the porch of their home in the hammock.
It's no use, matey. It's no use. We can't keep this up.
You mean?
Yes, I do. I'm through. Through rocking on this hammock. Back and forth. Back and forth. It gets monotonous.
Well, how else could you rock?
To and fro is a good way. Or hither and yon. Really, Mary, sometimes I wish you'd gone to school.
John, you haven't given me your decision yet about the money for Olive.
Olive? Who's Olive?
John, Olive is that daughter of ours.
Which daughter?
We have only one daughter, John.
No, that simplifies it. That must be the one, then.
See, John, I want to speak to you about her.
Is it about money again?
Yes, John.
What did you say?
I said yes, John.
John? Who's John?
You're John, my dear.
Oh, that's right. So I am. I must remember that. What were we talking about?
About Olive.
Olive? Who's Olive?
Our daughter, John.
Oh, yes. That girl is driving me crazy. She thinks I made her money. She's too extravagant. Not 1 cent, Needy. Not one red cent.
Oh, John, she's young. She's beautiful. You know, John, you're only young once and beautiful.
Oh, Needy, I'm not so young.
I don't think I can stand it much longer, the way you two act. We sit at dinner. Olive staring at you. You staring at Olive. You don't speak. Why? Don't you like Olive?
I like pickles. I'll have to cultivate a taste for Olive.
John, it's terrible. The very atmosphere is charged.
I meant to speak to you about that, matey. Everything around here is charged. It's got to stop, matey. You don't know the value of money.
But it's not for me, John. It's Olive.
Olive? Who's Olive?
Me. She's our daughter.
We have a lot of children, haven't we?
No, just one. And she must have nice things. John, dear, you must expect to spend money on a pretty girl.
I always did.
What?
I mean, I love you, matey. And don't forget, I worked hard for my money.
Until you married me.
Remember, dear, I'm a Thorndyke. I gave you my name in exchange for your money. Now I have your money and you have my name. And I have my name and your money. Oh, it's all so confused and complicated and confused.
John, I just can't have my daughter staying behind while her friends enjoy the pleasures and niceties of life. She's a Thorndyke, John.
Who's a Thorndyke?
Olive, our daughter.
Oh, naturally.
Well, what do you say, John? Yes or no?
Yes, I say no.
You can't refuse your own flesh and blood.
Matey, I don't want to refuse her. It's just that we've got to be careful of money now, matey. Now, of all times. Have I told you how things are down at the office?
No.
Well,
You mean?
Worse than that.
Oh, I didn't know. Then, John, maybe we shouldn't.
No, matey, because I love you. I'll call the bank and see if they can do something.
You're fair, John, and square.
Give me that phone. Hello, operator? Hit me the Last National Bank. Hello, bank. Give me the receiving teller. Hello, receiving. How are you? How's paying? Say, I haven't seen notes receivable lately. How's he feeling? Oh, that's good. Well, how's my balance? Well, what do you care who this is? I'm asking you a civil question. I expect a civil answer. How's my balance? All right, I'll let you in on a secret. This is Thorndyke. Now, how do I stand? I'm a bit surprised myself. Is it really that bad? It is. Oh, then, I guess it is. Well, goodbye, receiving.
What did he say, John?
He didn't say. It was after 3 o'clock and the bank was closed.
John, I know you'll do the right thing as you see it. Perhaps it was wrong of me to ask you to spend the money. It was just that I felt so sorry for Olive.
Olive? Who's Olive?
John, Olive is our daughter.
Oh, nice. Well, if you put it that way, matey, I can't resist. Tell whatever her name is. What is her name, matey?
Olive.
Oh, yes. Tell her she can have the money.
Oh, John, you're wonderful. You're fine. Olive will be so proud and so happy. Oh, John, kiss me. Kiss me.
At a time like this? Can't you see I'm busy? Always kissing.
But you do mean it, John. You will give Olive the money.
Of course I'll give it to her, although it takes the last penny I've got. How much does she want?
$12.
$12?
Well, she wants to buy a pair of alligator shoes.
She'll spoil the beast. Never heard of an alligator wearing shoes, but I'll give her the money, matey. Yes, I'm doing a noble thing.
Noble, John.
I'm a Thorndyke. I'm doing a thing that will outlive marble and the gilded monuments of princes.
Beautiful.
Am I really? Matey, say it again. Keep on saying it.
Perhaps you think it's better than...
Oh, she shall have it. Nothing's too good for Olive.
Olive? Who's Olive?
Who?
Olive, who's she?
I don't know, but I've seen you someplace before.
Ladies and gentlemen, the play you just heard, The Thorndyke, was written by Dick Mack.
party. Isn't it simply a wonderful broadcast? Isn't it, Andy?
Swell. I'll take it. Hello. Why, yes, Mr. Davis. I'd be proud to, Mr. Davis. Of course, you need somebody more like George Washington than me. But I'll do my best. Goodbye, sir. That was Mr. Davis, the high school principal.
Hmm?
I'm the president of the senior class, so he wants me to give a talk at school tomorrow for the Greek Relief Fund.
Well, that's very complimentary, son.
Oh, Andrew Hardy, you make a speech.
Yes, 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 Miss Benedict, and I'm going to ask my father for help, too. Dad, please, now, what would you say if you were in my position?
Well, Andy, I think I'd say that the whole existence of mankind is founded upon friendly human cooperation. Without such cooperation, we'd have no established law and order, no organized social system whatsoever. And mankind's cooperation with mankind must include the factor of help. And this help is not something which we in our nobility deign to bestow on those less fortunate. Help from one person to another, help from one group of people to another. That's not a privilege. It's a duty, a solemn obligation. For without this charitable cooperation between peoples, the race of man would perish from the earth, and the earth would be left to the dumb animals. Greece? Why, from my own college days, I remember what Lord Byron wrote about Greece. Cold is the heart, fair Greece, that looks on thee, nor feels as lovers o'er the dust they love. Dull is the eye that will not weep to see.
Pardon me. I got it. Hello. Oh, hello, Mr. Davis. You what? You forgot to tell me. Goodbye. Dad, my speech is to the first grade class, and honest, I don't think I'd better quote Lord Byron to those six-year-olds. Gee, Dad, how am I going to make a speech to a lot of babies? And now, ladies and gentlemen, one of the highlights of the night, Clark Gable and Merle Oberon. Merle Oberon. Someone suggested that I do a dramatic love scene with Merle Oberon, but no one listened to me. And we also have Clark Gable. You know, before the show, I was changing clothes in the dressing room, and I stripped down to my long underwear. And Sam Goldwyn told me I reminded him of a picture. I said, Clark Gable in Boomtown? He said, no, the awful truth. But seriously, we present now a modern romance starring Clark Gable and Merle Oberon and written by Robert Riley Crutcher. Mr. Gable plays David Russell, a young author traveling east on a fashionable train. On his way east, he will encounter Miss Oberon. Just now, he is walking into the dining car.
Table for one?
Yes, sir.
Can you hurry it up?
I'm sorry, we're very crowded. I'm afraid I'll have to put you there with that young lady.
The pretty one?
Well, that's too bad.
If you care to wait a moment.
No, I'll cooperate with the company. Lead on. Hello. Getting dark out, isn't it? It's getting dark out, isn't it?
It generally does when the sun goes down.
Yes, it generally does. My name is Dave Russell.
Tomato soup on the dinner.
I'm a writer. In fact, I'm a playwright.
Is that so?
I'm not talking to you. Go away.
No soup?
Scram. My first play is going into rehearsal tomorrow. It's a swell feeling. Makes you want to tell everybody you meet. You said your name was...
Was what?
Huh?
Was what?
What do you mean, what?
What did I say my name was? Please, if I said it, tell me.
Maybe you'd rather be alone.
No, please don't go. You see, I've been thinking and thinking for the past 2 hours, but it's no use. Who am I?
Well, I give up. Who are you?
You don't understand. My memory's gone. All I know is I'm on this train and I'm going to New York.
You sure you're not going to pieces?
This is serious. I tell you, I've lost my name.
Well, don't get sore at me. I haven't got it.
When the train pulled out, it gave a lurch, and I hit my head against the wall. Everything before that is blank. I'm afraid the only thing that'll bring me back is another shock.
Are you asking me to conk you on the head with another wall?
You needn't be funny. After all, there's such a thing as amnesia.
Sure. Uncle Henry claims that he had it when he married Aunt Maggie. But she has another name for it.
If this keeps up much longer, I'll lose my mind.
Well, in its present condition, what have you got to lose?
I'm desperate. How'll I find out who I am?
Have you looked in your purse?
Yes, there's not even a remote clue.
Hey, wait. Is that an identification bracelet you have on?
I don't know. I guess so.
Well, it might give us some dope. Here, let's see.
What does it say?
Made in the USA. Well, we've got you pinned down to the Western Hemisphere.
May I have it back? The hand, too. Thank you.
Now then, let's have a look at you. Hmm. Beautiful profile, gorgeous eyes, nice hair. Say, what do you care who you are, anyway?
You don't believe I'm telling the truth. You're laughing at me.
No, no, I'm not. Please don't cry.
I'll cry if I want to.
Take it easy. People are staring at us.
I don't care what they think.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hey, you.
Is through, boss?
Yeah, what would you say?
I'd say here's a check. $250.
Yeah, okay. Here, keep the change and get out of my way. Now, honey, we've got the whole club car to ourselves. Let's sit down and straighten out this thing.
So you can have some more fun at my expense.
Your expense? Knowing you 3 minutes has cost me $2.50. Come on, wipe off those tears.
But what am I going to do when I get to New York? I'm spent.
Well, cheer up. Maybe we'll have a train wreck and it'll all come back to you. Now, come on, honey. Take it easy and relax. Names aren't important. A rose by any other name would...
That's it.
That's what?
That's my name, Rose. Or rather, Rose Elaine. It popped into my head the minute you mentioned it.
Well, keep popping. See if you can get the rest.
Quick, give me some last names.
White, black, green, brown, Dubonnet, lavender, canary, yellow. Yellow goes well with rose, but I don't suppose that's it.
It's no use. I still don't know who I am.
Well, whoever you are, you're okay, and I'll take care of you.
You will?
Yep, in spite of everything. And believe me, in your case, everything covers a lot of territory. I like you. Plenty.
You mustn't say that. I may be a married woman.
Yeah, sure, but... A what? Oh, you can't be. I mean, do you feel married?
How does it feel?
Well, like you wish you weren't because now you've met me.
I don't know. I do feel rather funny.
Let's try the wedding march. Dum, dum, da, dum.
That sounds familiar.
Yes, no doubt. But does it bring back any personal memories?
No.
You're sure?
Positive.
Well, don't scare me like that again. Now, where were we? Oh, yes. Look, honey, you know, you could think better if you'd put your head on my shoulder. That's it. Sure. That's it.
David, this has been a wonderful evening. I'd love to sit up all night, but I'm getting sleepy.
Okay. You remember which is your birth?
I'm not sure, but
don't
I think...
Don't think, honey. Don't think. I'll find it. Porter, where's the conductor?
Well, he's on the train.
He's on the train. You know that to be a fact, do you?
Yes, he's on the train, all right.
Wise guy. He just talked himself out of a $50 tip. I'll find that berth myself. Here, this must be it.
You'd better knock first. The curtains are closed.
I tell you, this is it. See, it's the only one without shoes under it. Well, she had no business going to bed with her shoes on. Look. Looks like you'll have to use my berth. It's an upper. Do you mind shinnying up to the second floor to roost?
Where will you sleep?
In the club car. Here. This one's mine. Let me help you up. There. Okay?
Perfect. I've never slept in an upper before.
There's only one thing to remember.
What's that?
That you're in an upper. Good night. Well, this is New York. Recognize it?
No. This must be my first visit. Now, what are you going to do with me?
I don't know. You're too big to check. But I said I'd take care of you, honey, and I will. Now, look, in case anything happens, here's my card. You can get in touch with me at the Lombardi Theater. And, well, I only have $25 with me, but you'd better take it.
Oh, I think that's too much.
So do I. But take it anyway.
Oh, look. That porter, he has my bags. I'm sure they're mine.
Hey, those bags belong over here.
Yeah, has the lady got a check?
Well, no, but...
Well, I can't let go of the bags till I get the check.
Say, what's this? $2 lying on the floor. That must be yours.
Yes, boss, you'll have to come with me and sign a receipt for these.
Be right with you. Honey, there's something I want to say before you find out who you are.
What is it, David?
I hope you're not married.
Oh, David.
Hold the fort. Sorry that receipt took so long. They make you write everything but your congressman. Well, honey, don't keep me in suspense. Who are you?
I beg your pardon. Who are you?
Who am... Oh, you remember me? I'm the guy who slept in the washbowl last night.
I never saw you before in my life, and I'd like to know what makes you think you can call me, honey.
Well, $25 makes me think so. Look in your purse. See if you haven't got $25.
As a matter of fact, I have.
Well, who do you think put it there? The FHA?
I don't know what it has to do with you. I frequently carry that amount, and often much more.
Well, I don't. And I want it back, Rose Elaine.
How do you know my name?
How do I know? Never mind, sister. Keep the dough. I know when I've been taken. But get this. I was on the level when I said I went for you.
David, were you?
Oh. Now it's David again.
Did you really fall in love?
Look, let's skip it. There's nothing wrong with you. It's me. I'm nuts. Well, nice to have met you. So long,
David. Wait, David. I want to explain...
You're wasting your time. I'm broke.
Please listen. I was on my way to New York to get a job on the stage. And when you got on the train, I knew who you were and that you had a play in rehearsal.
So you decided to put on a show for me to prove you could act.
Yes, David. I wanted a part in your play, that was all. But then I got to know you better and better, and I felt cheaper and cheaper. And, David, I'm not acting now.
Forget it, honey. I can't give you a part in the play, but I have something else in mind for you.
What?
Personal appearances from now on with me.
Oh, David, darling. But what I don't understand is, did you know all the time I didn't fool you?
Yes, honey. I knew all the time. You didn't fool me a bit.
That's funny. It worked perfectly in a magazine story I read once. Did you ever read that story?
Read it? Honey, I wrote it.
Like millions of other Americans who are listening to America Calling, a parade of Hollywood talent that millions of dollars couldn't buy, stars who, like you, have been stirred by the courage of the little Greek nation in its fight for liberty. These stars have given their time and talent to help the starving women and children of the Greeks who are fighting for democracy. We are asking help for them, for bread, not for bullets, for even children of the heroes must have food. You can send your help to these people very easily. Just listen. You need but call Bullocks, Trinity 1911, or the May Company, Tucker 8211. A young lady at the board will accept your call, and the Western Union messenger engaged for this purpose will come to your door to pick up the same. So please pick up your phone now. The number is Trinity 1911 or Tucker 8211. And do not phone this station. You will feel prouder of yourself in the morning if you obey that impulse tonight. And now here are some of the contributions and the names that have been coming in to us. Deborah Lewin contributes $5. Mrs. C. Thomas, $5. Mr. and Mrs. Fritz Burns, $5. Mr. Woodbury, $5. E.W. Hennings of West Los Angeles, $5. A. Namalis, $10. Jewel Mayfield, $10. Mr. and Mrs. John C. Simmons, or rather Simmers, that is, of Los Angeles, $25. Mr. and Mrs. M.W. Glantz of San Marino, $25. T.H. Russell, $5. D.S. Stauffer, $5. Ann Davis of Beverly Hills, $5. H.L. Demoulian, $5. And now we return you to the program.
It's a far cry, perhaps, from the war-torn world of 1941 to the happy Victorian days when our ancestors were first pleasantly distracted by the immortal words and music of the Messrs. Gilbert and Sullivan. This evening, we'd like to present some of the fine music of the Mikado in modern style. First, here comes Frank Morgan as the Lord High Executioner Coco.
I resent the impertinent implication, Owen. Nobody can call me Cuckoo and get away with it.
Nobody called you Cuckoo, Frank. I said Coco.
Coco? You forget. I'm on a coffee program. I have lived...
All right, then. Here's Frank Morgan as the Lord High Executioner. How's that?
That's thoroughly inadequate. I demand an elaborate execution. I mean, an introduction. nothing much. Just a few simple phrases abetted by a chorus of 200 of the finest voices, augmented by seven leading symphony orchestras of America, conducted by Stravinsky, Stokowski, Koussevitzky, with Meredith Wilson turning the pages. This takes me back to my days at the La Scala and the Metropolitan, where I was the favorite of the first nighters, the idol of the dress circle.
How about the diamond horseshoe?
Well, I wore it on my vest. It was a pretty little thing. What?
We haven't time for any of this stuff. Come on and sing.
Oh, me? Sing? Oh, of course. Now, as someday it may happen that a victim must be found, I've got a little list. Of society offenders who might well be underground. They never would be missed. I've got a little list. There are pestilential nuisances who write for autographs, or people who have flabby hands and irritating laughs. Or people who are up in dates and bore you with them flat, or persons who in shaking hands shake hands with you like that. And all third persons who on spoiling tater tates insist
They'd none of them be missed. They'd none of them be missed. No! There's the ballroom serenader and the others of his race. And the piano organist. I've got him on my list. And the people who eat peppermint and puff it in your face, they never would be missed. They never would be missed. Then the idiot who praises with enthusiastic tone all centuries but this and every country but his own. And the lady from the provinces who dresses like a guy. Oh, and who doesn't think she dances but would rather like to try. And that singular anomaly, the lady novelist. I don't think she would be missed. Do you? I'm sure she'd not be missed.
Well, you can't.
And now that you've heard Frank Morgan as Coco, the next character we meet is Nanky Poo, the Dick Powell of his day, played by the Dick Powell of our day, who comes to us with the courtesy of Joan Blondell.
A wandering minstrel high, a thing of shreds and patches, of ballad songs and snatches, and a dream. My catalogue is long to every passion ranging, and to your humors changing, I tune my subtle song, I tune my subtle song. A little swing-a-roo, a little swing-a-roo. A wandering minstrel high, a peanut spread and patches, of ballad songs and snatches, and dreamy lullabies. My catalog is long to every passion ranging, and to your humors changing, I sing my lullaby, a dreamy lullaby.
Most famous numbers of the Mikado. It's usually sung by three delicious bundles of femininity. This evening it will be presented for the first time and possibly the last by those three delicious flavors, Pepsodent, Jell-O, and Metro, better known as Bob Hope, Jack Benny, and Groucho Marx.
I'm Yum Yum, the Tokyo Tease.
Yeah? I'm a people. I try hard to please.
I'm Pity Sing, and no wisecracks, please.
From school are we, worked as a schoolgirl well can be, filled to the brim with girlish glee. Three little maids from school,
we sing is a source of fun.
Nobody's safe for we care for none.
Life is a joke that's just begun. Three little maids from school. Three little maids who all unwary come from a lady seminary. Three little maids from school. Three little maids from school. Three little maids.
That was the Mikado, ladies and gentlemen. We had to cut it short. We're an hour overtime. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we are honored with the presence of a very distinguished actor whose voice all of you know, Mr. Ronald Colman. Mr. Colman will read an historically dramatic poem written by Gene Fowler, The Jarvis Bay Goes Down.
Bulletin from the London Bureau of the Associated Press, November the 6th, 1940. The Admiralty today announced the sinking of the Australian freighter HMS Jarvis Bay while on convoy duty in the mid-Atlantic. She's an old freighter of some 14,000 tons standing in the roadstead of a port somewhere south of Singapore. She lists a bit as if wearied by the typhoons of the China Seas, by the whole gales of Tasman, by the turbulence of wind off Borneo. Her gear is obsolete, her iron skin blistered, pucked with rust. Her engines are rheumatic, and her sawtooth screw will yield less 14 knots. She is the old Jarvis Bay of Australian registry, resting between tides from her obscure drudgeries somewhere south of Singapore. She nods at her mooring cables, head bent to the dry monsoon. The Jarvis Bay is nodding, half asleep, when a gig draws alongside, and there is brought aboard, solemnly, a flag with a blue field. A storied ensign, emblem of Britain's naval reserve. This of itself becomes a rousing circumstance to one so frowsed, so drably sleeping somewhere south of Singapore. Up this starboard ladderway there comes a new master, puffing somewhat with middle age. He looks about. He looks above, below, forward, aft, he peers. His is the manner of a man recapturing a memory. He is Fogarty Fagan, called from retirement to command the Jarvis Bay. For 10 years, Fogarty Fagan has walked in his English garden, watching the roses bud, the violets bloom, enjoying each miracle of season that brings white blossoms to the hawthorn hedge. But now he has left his barrow and his slips to bring the storied ensign with its blue fields, blue as the violets of his garden, bringing it from afar to the old Jarvis Bay. His voice rolls against the breakwater. His big hands grasp the teakwood rail. He swears a bit, and finally, the Jarvis Bay awakens. Soon, a battery is supplied, a small one. Guns of 5-inch caliber. Then, with 100 young reservists for her crew, the Jarvis Bay puts out to sea from somewhere south of Singapore. Captain Fogarty Fagan has a distant rendezvous with other old masters, summoned from retirement. Called by their king from their little farm, from their office too, from their fireside chairs, from the cities and the shires. The threefold war, earth, sky, sea, beggars the world. Ships go down, each day go down, and bottoms must be had to bear cargoes to Britain. So, up comes the Jarvis Bay, up from tropical waters through Suez, through the Strait of Gibraltar, out and across the Atlantic, and to the Americas. In a harbor of the north, and with brave haste, the old hulls are laded to their loading lines with cargoes for Britain. Captain Fogarty Fagan listens to the rumbling of winches. Hears the Samson posts creak. Hears the chains and blocks complain. Harries his first officer, Mr. Wilson, with command. As things needful for the lifebeat of England's great heart are stowed aboard. Hurry, damn it, Mr. Wilson, sir, he shouts to his first officer. We are not sleeping now, Mr. Wilson, somewhere south of Singapore. on a Canadian bay. From behind the fog bank of November dawn, a convoy line puts out. 38 ships put out to sea with cargoes for Britain. A consignment to help sustain the life beat of England. Goods to provision an isle that for 1,000 years has prized the freedom and the dignity of man. The gun crews at the Jarvis Bay sleep beside their battery. They seem young seminars with Parker hoods cowling their heads to keep out the cold sea rime. Night falls. A great and somber hymn. The night of November the 4th, 1940 years since our Lord, is an anthem of wind and small following sea. The morning comes like a priest, upholding a golden monstrance. The morning of the 5th finds the Jarvis Bay and her convoy strung like a procession of pilgrims against the dawn. The ship's bell sounds. The practice rounds are fired. The sun is on the meridian, and Fogarty Fagan shoots the sun for latitude. 8 bells again, and Fogarty Fagan shoots the sun for longitude. And then, at 5 o'clock, the lookout calls from the crow's nest. Ship, sir, off the starboard bow! Through his glass, Fogarty Fagan makes out smoke, a black gargoyle in the sky, east by southeast. Then sights the ship, hull down. And now, a battleship comes boiling over the horizon. She opens fire with heavy guns. Captain Fogarty Fagan telegraphs his engine room to strain the boilers till they burst. He bellows, curses, brings to bear the pop guns of his battery against the Goliath armor of the battleship. He sends up smoke to screen the fleet. He orders all the convoy ships to scatter wide and fast. Then Fogarty Fagan sets out alone to meet the battleship. 5-inch guns against 11-inch guns. Eggshell hull against scrap plate.
Jammy, Mr. Wilson, sir. We're not hearing mandolins today somewhere south of Singapore.
This is a mad thing to do, this sea charge of the Jarvis Bay. Yet the sky of dead admirals look down from the Grand Haven. Look down at Fogarty Fagan, whose senile tub steams bows on for the battleship. Nelson, Drake, Beatty, Harwood,
yes, and the Americans, Porter, Farragut, and John Paul Jones, all look down in wonderment.
Now a burst of shrapnel rakes the Jarvis Bay and tears the right arm from the sleeve of Fogarty Fagan. He does not fall.
He grasps the teakwood rail with his other hand, masking his agony with bellowings that rise above the guns. Nor will he let a tourniquet be placed upon the stump. He waves the stump, and Mr. Wilson knows, and the sky of dead admirals know, that if a hand were there, it would be making a great fist.
Still steaming toward the battleship, Fogarty Fagan keeps his little guns ablast. The eyes of the setters and of the pointers grow black and blue from the recoil, their eardrums dead. A salvo comes with the top roll of the battleship. And now the anthem, emblem with the blue field, is shot away. Enraged, bloody, rocking on his heels, Fogarty Fagan roars, "Hoist another ensign, damn me, Mr. Wilson, sir! Hoist another flag, that we may fight as Englishmen!" The boatswain procures a flag from the locker, a flag used for the burial of the dead at sea.
"Here, sir," he cries, as to a brace he bends the banner of England.
The Jarvis Bay, ablaze from stern to bow, at dusk, still fires her puny guns and will not change her course.
Salvos from turret, guns 3-3, make great geysers grow about the old ship's wake, but still her guns give voice.
And now she's struck below the waterline. Her boilers go. The Jarvis Bay begins to settle by the stern, yet sinking till she faces her antagonist. Then the waters begin to close over her. The waters close over Fogarty Fagan and over the flag that once was used for burials at sea. And now night spreads its shroud. Of 38 ships in the convoy, 29 are saved, their cargo saved to help sustain the lifebeat of England. While a sky of dead admirals look on and claim Captain Fogarty Fagan for their own. The Jarvis Bay goes down. Goes down as no mere casualty of storm, to rust out fathoms deep, in common grave with sisters unremembered by the years. The Jarvis Bay, of Australian registry from somewhere south of Singapore, goes down in the history of an isle that for 1,000 years has prized the freedom and the dignity of man.
For his magnificent original musical score, which accompanied Mr. Coleman's magnificent reading. Incidentally, the poem, The Jarvis Bay Goes Down, written by Gene Fowler, will shortly be published in book form, and the royalties will be contributed to the Bundles for Britain cause.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we find two of Hollywood's better-known playboys, Bob Snake Hips Hope and Jack Speedy Benny, with hair slicked down and hopes high. Benny is, too, at the Palladium, one of Hollywood's better-known dance halls. On the other side of the floor stand two of the regular Palladium jitterbabes, Myrna Loy and Mary Martin, watching Snake Hips and Speedy with interest. And now we look in upon the boys.
Say, this is the place I was telling you about, Speedy. Come on, we'll park our derbies. You want to check your spats, too?
Nah, I better not. My leggings will fall off.
Say, now, don't be too eager if we meet any girls tonight, Speedy. We've been out with plenty of girls before. Tell them.
Hey, well, if we do get girls, for heaven's sake, tonight, don't take me home first.
Okay.
Gee, what a bunch of pretty babes here tonight. Hey, Snake Hips, lend me your comb.
My comb? Here it is, but there's some teeth missing.
Hey, for me, that's good enough.
Speedy, that babe over there, the blonde, she's giving me the eye.
Giving you the eye? She's looking at me.
Yeah, well, with the kind of eyes she's got, she's looking at both of us. Boy, I can't wait till I get one of those gals in the dance floor. You'll have to admit I'm a swell dancer, Speedy.
Yeah, you follow beautifully.
Well, I picked it up on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, that's about all you ever did. Come on, every minute we're not dancing, we're wasting our money. This is a tough spot we're in, you know that, don't you? Hey, that was kind of quick, but I had fun that dance. How'd you like it?
Oh, it was all right, but this time let's dance with girls.
Say, look, Speedy. Or Snake Hips. I'm Speedy. Yeah. Look at those two over at the fountain. The ones drinking the Coke. They're trying to pick us up.
Oh, yeah, the two drinking the Coke. There, honey, should we go right over or should we play hard to get?
Ah, let's play hard to get. At least until after they pay their check.
Ah, why should I worry if no girls ask me to dance? I just came down here to watch the kids have fun.
Yeah, I just came down here to watch, too.
Well, I wouldn't get any kick out of dancing with some of these young girls.
Nah, I wouldn't get any kick out of dancing with them either.
Gee, that was fun. What do we play now?
Yeah, I think those two girls are coming over to us.
Yeah, quick, give me some sense. Say, they act like they're talking about it.
Mary? What is it, Myrna? You see those two fellas giving us the eye?
Where?
Right over there. Oh,
are they fellas?
Yeah, they're wearing pants, aren't they?
Well, in Hollywood, that could mean anything.
Gee, what a pair of bugs.
Oh, I don't know. The older one don't look so bad.
You think so?
Well, which one's the older one?
Gee, what crummy-looking cactus.
Yeah. over that one's nose. You think it's intentional? Well, I don't know. From the looks of it, his mother must have been frightened by a washboard. That other specimen's no bargain either. Yeah, he looks rather old to be in a place like this, doesn't he? He looks too old to be any place that doesn't have candles burning. Say, Myrna, give me a hunk of chewing gum. What flavor chewing gum you want? Oh, don't make no difference. I want it for my run and my stocking. There's those two guys again. See, I don't like the way they're looking at us. As if they'd never seen a woman before. Ah, oh, don't be silly. They must have had mothers. The younger one's really the snappy kid. Get a load of that suit he has on. Yeah, it droops even where he doesn't. See? Look, Carney's winking at me. The fat one. No, Carney. Well, we ain't had many dances, and they got legs. How'd we go about meeting them? Well, you go over to the tall one and pretend you know him and say good evening. And when he ain't looking, I'll slug him. They're coming over here.
Hello, girl. You want a neck?
The idea.
Well, we were just making conversation. Say, which one of you girls would like to dance with me?
And that goes to the other one, too. Hello, ski nose.
How'd you know? Say, Blondie, you care for a tramp?
I picked out you, didn't I? Say, you fellas come here stag?
No, we brought girls.
Well, where are they?
They were too old to get out of the car. So you're cute. How about flinging the chancy around?
Okay, Grandpa. Don't you think you need a little lubrication? Oh, come on. Let's trip the light. Fantastic.
Say, kid. You know, you're lucky you got a dancer like me. And what you looking at me like that for?
Is that just your face, or are you just ad-libbing till Halloween?
How about your kids going out with us somewhere?
Well, I don't know.
Well, hurry up and make up your mind. We're double parked. Say, kid, you don't mind if I crouch a little, do you? How do you like this step?
Are you doing the rumba, or are you getting ready to lay an egg?
Looks like we all are. Well, that's the end. Looks like the dance is over, girls. Good night.
Wait a minute. I feel hungry. I'm hungry, too. How about some chow?
Girls, as far as Speedy is concerned, the word chow only means a dog. Looks like we're stuck with sandwiches anyway. Come on, shall I get the money out?
No, don't roll your stocking down here.
Speedy, I think I can get my babe to go riding with me. Give me the keys to your Maxwell. Okay, here's the keys. Here's a crank. Here's a gallon of gas. Don't forget to wind it up good.
Well, you fellas going to take us driving, or ain't you?
Sure, we'll really swing it. We'll stop at a drive-in.
Are you sure you can spare it? And can we order a 10-cent hamburger?
Oh, sure, we'll go for a 10-cent hamburger.
And a 25-cent ride in a rowboat on Westlake Park?
Sure, we're sailing.
And then we'll go to Cyril's for dinner.
Cyril's?
Well, how about a snake here?
I'm still in the rowboat at Westlake Park.
How about you, Speedy?
I dropped out of the hamburger stand. Good night, girls.
Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, during the past hour and a half, you've heard a parade of talent presented by the motion picture and radio industries, combining their talents because they believe that we in America should help the Greek nation in its gallant fight for freedom. To all of these stars, the Greek War Relief Committee offers sincere thanks for their appearance. And thanks are also extended to Jack Benny's writers, Bill Maher and Eddie Beloine, and to the other writers and composers who have contributed sketches and music. To the arrangers and copyists, typists, and countless other workers in radio and pictures who have helped to stage this program. Our thanks also to the two national networks and the many independent stations who have given us their time to bring you this message.
Oh,
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, I bring you Mr. Charles Lawton.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's something I'd like to read you very much. It's a telegram, another telegram received by Mr. Sam Goldwyn. It goes as follows. Dear Sam, Mr. Van Nomikos, Supreme President of AHEPA, the outstanding Greek-American organization, delivered to me personally a few minutes ago a $50,000 check and promised to deliver another check of $40,000 next Tuesday. Mr. James Toulis, chairman of the Detroit chapter, delivered to me a check of $22,000.
This is Ted Bond saying good night to you all.